names are overwhelming.
Not just names, but your style of delivery could be a little clearer.
Well, it's clear to some people, and it'll never be clear to others. So why change it?
I really want to see your message.
My message.
I really want to see. Your
okay,
message.
Do you want to hear it? Do you want to hear it, or do you have an idea of what it is? Do you really want to hear it? Are you going to listen? Can you listen?
Yes, I'll stop paying for a toll call and I'll just listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Phil, and we'll keep at this for more than 5 minutes.
My premise, supported by Tom's books, is that, starting with two books, Operation Sunrise, two of those, that before the war was over, our OSS people, like Alan Dulles and William Donovan, and you come in and correct me if I'm wrong, were making deals in Bern, Switzerland, with Heinrich Himmler's agents to bring scientists to this country who were experimenting, running camps, to effect, they said, if we control the sky, we control the world, and to affect our government because they never wanted to be the ally of Russia, and Hitler was supposed to invade Russia, not bomb England. He made a no-no. So we were forced to go to war with Hitler, but before the war was over, by 2 years, we were making arrangements in Germany and Japan, through Douglas MacArthur in Japan and Charles Willoughby, to structure the world again to win the war that Germany didn't win two times around. Walter Dornberg, in fact, I had the air last week, and I've had the air before, if I repeat it, it's for a purpose, the head of Bell Helicopter, who brought Wernher von Braun to this country, said, we didn't come here to lose World War III, we lost two.
Right.
And so my premise is that the intention of not coexisting with Russia had been going on in Europe, living with Russia, since the revolution. And that before the war winded down, we had the corporations and the technique by which to prepare the next war. And we turned America then into what Hitler was, making war against Russia. We never intended a democracy, third world or anywhere, to be in peace. We overthrew every democratically elected officer. We tried Albania, it didn't work, so Mossadegh worked in Iran. And then going around the world, we killed every head of state that wanted a system that had coexisted or wanted peace. Is that true, Tom? What do you want to add to that overview?
Consistent. Well, this is sort of gets to the essence, but you have to study history and look back at the kind of people and the kind of groups that have been prominent in history. Now, after World War II, a group of people, well, let's put it this way, there have sort of been two major groups in the world. One believed that the economic system should, I'm talking about in the Western world, one group believed that the economic system should be a monopoly state capitalism. This is what you had in Italy, this is what you had in Germany. The real opposite sort of economic system was, of course, Soviet Russia, which was a socialist state.
Nonetheless.
Now, who benefited from monopoly state capitalism? Well, the established church, the established rich families who owned the property, and the corporations.
Right.
Who benefits in Soviet Russia? Well, it's that elite group, which is kind of indefinite how they're picked.
Okay.
You have these two opposing groups. Now, in the Western world, you have some what we call a liberal monopoly state capitalists who figure that you should kind of pay lip service to democracy, allow the forms of democracy, but when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, the same rich families who own the property, who own the stocks and bonds, who own the industries, the corporations, those people really have the say.
Okay.
The old saying is the golden rule, who has the gold makes the rule.
Makes the
but
rule.
Beyond the capital, hasn't
now,
the gold been the
well,
war?
I'm trying to make it very simple for this guy.
Okay, and then we'll get into the documentation
now,
which you have to there, substantiate this.
Among the people in the Western capitalist nations, there are a group who are kind of get excited about religion. I call them the zealots. They're the people that get excited that Russia is a nation of supposedly godless, atheistic communists. And they get all shook up about that. I call them the zealots or the true believers. And incidentally, if you want to read about these people, you can read a book called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer, which is very, very enlightening.
Psychology.
Now, who are these people? Well, these are the very, very conservative industrial corporations, which George Seldes used to talk about. He called them the NAM. They were mostly members of the National Association of Manufacturers, although that relationship has now been pretty much clouded since World War II.
Andy Seldes.
But these people were the religious zealots, and so they include all the outgrowth of the Nazis in Germany after World War II, the zealots in the Vatican, which more or less controls the mafia, and as I said, this conservative group of monopoly state capitalists.
Okay.
And they pretty much control the aerospace industry. Now, the Nazi thing is so important because after World War II, all these able people were brought into the United States and infiltrated into every segment of the society, as well as they were infiltrated into South America much more openly, and they pretty much controlled the continent of South America since World War II. Now, the planning for this occurred, May is trying to say, the planning for this occurred certainly starting in 1944, but probably earlier in 1943, and the people in the United States and England and in France who agreed with this very conservative monopoly state capitalism and were the religious zealots, they started making deals with each other during World War II. Mm-hmm. And what we see today is an outgrowth of their 40-year attempt to take power. And now I don't believe they have total power yet, but they are formidable.
And a lot of mutual support. And there is.
And that's all we're trying to say.
Okay, we'll talk more about the secret government.
Caller? Yes.
We have, okay. Let's caller, go ahead and welcome to KKUP. Thanks. You're on the air.
I'd like to announce a workshop that has to do with the process of what we're talking about. And it's being done by the Santa Cruz Resource Center for Nonviolence and the Santa Cruz New Jewish Agenda. It's called Working as Allies, Overcoming the Barriers of Racism and Anti-Semitism. And it's being put on by Bria Tchaikovsky, who's the National Chair of the New Jewish Agenda, and C.T. Vivian, the Director of the Black Action Strategies and Information Center. And he was a civil rights activist in association with Dr. Martin Luther King. It's on Sunday, March 22nd, from 1 to 5, at the First Congregational Church Fellowship Hall, 900 High Street, Santa Cruz.
Now, see, that's a good start in a positive way, because racism and anti-Semitism gives a power structure. They divide people, divide and conquer, like Iran and Iraq. Right. And this, like, as against the Beyond process, which is okay, but given an alternative, you're calling it on a very good. I mean, everything I think isn't negative. I just want to hear something positive. And that is a very good start, is that understanding each other and wanting to bridge those differences, that there are similarities between people, and the society plays up the differences because it's economically profitable to them and us. And the minute you break the differences and say, a friend of mine who's Persian called me last night, and he was concerned because there was a letter to the editor referring to people, the way the administration can treat them in Iran or Persia or Sudan and the Middle East, is all being black, and the mentality, the power structure, they're grouped together is black. There's a letter in the paper, editor of the paper, and in the minds of those people, they are. And the minute people get together and break those differences, I commend you on that. I mean, I think that's really a good place to start. It's as fundamental as worrying about bombs, because once you all get along together, you can control the weapons.
Right. This is a sliding scale, and pre-registration is strongly suggested. The phone number is 423-1626. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I also wanted to add is that this is an information society, but it is not an education society. And I think education really comes in when we're willing to be bridge builders.
When you use the information, then you get education.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that as the person earlier was talking about spiritualism, I think, at least for myself, the true spiritualism comes in when I can be more connected and understand why differences exist, and that we begin to have a productive, constructive communication with people that we've been cut off before with historically, strategically, through society.
Exactly. There's a lot of people now going down to Nicaragua working and picking the coffee beans and helping, and the real spirituality comes, in my own position or opinion, it comes like the people in the sanctuary movement, saving people who are going back to be killed by death squads, is as important as my meditating, because I was able through the 70s with prison work to actually save the lives of specific prisoners and one who was headed for a lobotomy. And you can be very spiritual and calling the warden and kicking ass and saving people's lives.
I'd like to make one last announcement, and that is I'm part of a biracial network in Santa Cruz, and the next meeting, which is at the YWCA, is on April 11th on a Saturday at 4 o'clock. And some of the informations that we have written and we'd like to circulate widely are printed through the Council on Interracial Books for Children. And one of the printouts is 10 Quick Ways to Analyze Children's Books for Racism and Sexism. Because if we're really going to start breaking down some of the isms that hold us back and create the subconscious conditioning to perpetuate a lot of the things that are happening in politics as civilians, quote-unquote, it's important for our children to really get the message early on what life is really all about.
Yeah.
And not to be, not to follow in the same footsteps as what's happening today.
Well, I think one of the problems though, with children is like Nancy Reagan saying to children, say no to drugs. The problem can be understood emotionally where children play with each other, different races, or Jew and Gentile, or black and white.
Right.
But when you compete in the job market, when the kid becomes a teenager and wants a car, then he forgets the past because I watched Phil Donahue yesterday with all males on, they're all black males.
Right.
Then everything you learned is unlearned if the Jew got the job or the black got the job. And then you have to look at people as people. And I think everything changes, no matter what you feel or how open you are with the little kiddies. As adolescence is the turning point, and I think the young adults, young marrieds, and go in the job market, they should educate themselves, because the little kids will play, but then they get to be their parents' age, and they don't care what you taught them. They want that trip to Europe, even if it's a job to put somebody else out.
Fine. I think one of the things that we are trying to focus on as well is building a skills resource list.
Yeah.
Not only individually as members in our group, but also in the community, so we can directly, on an economic level, be supporting one another that have been strategically unemployed, strategically underskilled, and strategically not put out in the media as having valuable creative or marketable any kind of things.
Okay.
And I think that you're saying being educated and informed is one thing, and also trying to promote a grassroots active movement is also another thing. I think that all of those things have to be worked on together, and then one can start creating a sense of spirit, because spirituality means that you haven't, to me, you haven't let the predominant society kill your spirit.
Amen. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mae Brussel, for all of your work and all of your information that you put out to people on a regular basis.
Do you ever call in the talk show part of my program? Have you ever called in?
No.
Well, you should, because then you could announce some of these things.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. We're going to declare something of a moratorium on calls, unless we get calls from George Bush or others that we tried to set up yesterday.
I have a some questions that were passed on by callers. First of all, A caller brought up the National Security Agency, which is one of the largest, most powerful, and most well-funded of the espionage agencies. Could you describe what they are and what they do, and your research into that?
Yeah, you want to go to that, Tom, and then I'll connect it to the Contragate story.
Well, the National Security Agency is an agency of the U.S. government, and it's primary purpose is to collect information. What it does, it practically, through satellite means and through other forms of surface electronic surveillance, phone taps, you name it, mail intercepts, any way possible that you can think of, it collects any information which it may be interested in. And therefore, it's kind of like Big Brother. They have the amount of
Big Daddy.
The amount of sheets of paper that they accumulate every day, day in and day out, is horrendous. Somebody described one time the filing and storage of all this stuff in the basements of I think they're at Fort Meade, Maryland.
I'm sure what we're saying today is going into that computer.
Yeah, and then they have these tremendous computers, and I think now they're putting all of this information they get through satellite surveillance, through radio intercept, through all these intercepts, they put that in there. Then they have people who are looking at this, and from there it goes to other agencies of the government. Now, I have been told that they do have a covert action arm, and this is probably because of a little professional jealousy among government agencies. They all think they have to have a covert action arm, but I personally have not studied that too much. No. But they're the government's universal vacuum cleaner.
They're the listening post. Yeah, of telephone long, everything that goes overseas. At the time of the Contragate story, well, just a few weeks ago, it came out that Ronald Reagan left the White House to commend the people at NSA. There's a National Security Council, then the National Security Agency, and they do all the wiretapping, and he went to tell them what a good job. Did you see that story? He commended them
that
they keep secrets and don't get leaks, and that they pick up phone telephonically, all these things that are happening. And the very day that he was there, it was revealed that Oliver North had taken documents from the NSA and given them to Iran, top secret documents, and passed them on to Iran. His own National Security Council, the guy, his little son that McFarland loved like a son, and Ollie, the doll, took and broke, and this will come up at the time of the hearings, actually broke the law by taking top secret things that were never to be given to Iran. It was hardly an ally at the time, this great terrorist nation. And that while the president is telling them they don't leak, they're so wonderful, his own agent inside the White House had got them from the NSA and passed them overseas.
Well, this shows that the information from the NSA, one of the first places it goes is to the NSC.
Exactly.
And it shows how important that Ollie North really is, because he had access first among anybody of this information from the NSA. Now, they talk about this as a little light kernel, North, but he was more important and had much more power than you would ever guess by him having only the rank of a lieutenant colonel in the Marines.
Well, now they're changing the story, right? In this week, which you and I both knew,
they're trying to play
him down.
Is that
Admiral Pondexter, and that's Navy intelligence, which was behind the Permandex and all the Credit Suisse and John Connolly, that actually North isn't as important as Pondexter. He's just the leg man, right?
North was equally, in my view, as important as Admiral Poindexter.
Well, he did the errands. He bit the money in the banks that were set up 20, 30 years ago for Robert Vesco and the whole gang. But they tried to make him as the sole fellow, but he did have power. Like you say, he could go to NSA and get anything that was top secret and give it to any enemy.
Right, and he did.
And he did. While the president is commending them, he has a thief right downstairs that he loves.
It's also equally certain that Poindexter and North knew far more what was going on in the government than Reagan.
Casey? Yeah.
Well, there is the National Security Agency.
And I don't say this because Reagan is... didn't have the power, shouldn't have known about it. The guy is just totally inept and didn't care. And besides, he doesn't hold the power.
Yeah, and we're going to talk some more about who really does. This is Tom Davis, you're just hearing, actually, John Lytle speaking here, and you're into Light and the Whole Truth. It's part of our marathon here with Tom Davis and Mae Brussel, special guests in our studio today. I want to issue a quick disclaimer that, as we'll repeat at the end of the show, the views and opinions you're hearing are those of the speakers and shouldn't necessarily be assumed to be those of this station. We're happy to bring them to you, and we'll be opening the phones wide open to more questions. Charlie, we have some key ground we want to cover, including the point of Phil's and others. We're going to get really into some of the basic premises and overviews some more. But
so does that about tie it up for on the National Security Agency?
Sure.
We could okay, let's. I got a list of questions from listeners. Could you, between you and Tom, could you make a sort of a short list of recommended books to give a good overview of the things you've been talking about?
Can well, you give five and I'll give five, Tom.
Yeah, we do. We might mention, too, that Tom Davis, and we'll give the address again at the end, probably if they just wrote Post Box 1107, Aptos. And
just write books. Just write
just books.
P.O. Box 1107, Aptos, California, APTOS 95001. And if you want a book catalog of about 550 books, send me a 22-cent stamp. You don't have to send a stamped envelope. Just send a 22-cent stamp. Now, on the other hand, if you ask a question, send the self-addressed stamped envelope, and that goes for anything you write to May, too. If you write to either of us, ask a question or ask for a sheet or a document, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope. But in the case of my catalog, just send a 22-cent stamp. And the reason for that is that if I put my catalog, which weighs almost an ounce, and an envelope in an envelope, then it weighs over an ounce, and I have to give the government 39 cents instead of 22 cents. So that's the reason for that.
You can staple it and send it on. It's definitely an ounce of real information too. The 550 books are.
Careful, and I just don't like to give the government 39 cents when I can give them 22 cents.
I get enough as it is. Okay. And
what five books do you think are the most important?
Oh, five books. The trouble is that there isn't any overview.
Well, I think there is.
And, I mean, the powers that be plan it that way. But there's no book that really tells you the past history, what has happened. But to start out with, as we started with the Kennedy assassination, I would name William Torbett, the pseudonym for Dave Copeland's
book,
The Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal, otherwise known as the Torbett, and we are making copies of that all the time. We have permission to do so in case anybody thinks they want to get after us for copying something. And that's 1595.
And that has held up the last 14 years with the evidence coming in.
And the second book that I would name is Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, because this shows the activities of this great group of German industrialists, some German bankers, the successors to the whole Nazi regime, and what they did with their money, how they moved their stocks and bonds and gold bullion out of Germany after World War II, and also how they set up corporations to then try to reestablish what we call a Fourth Reich.
And IG Farben's and the others are still exerting this influence today.
And part of that stock is IG Farben's stock, and the book is so tremendous because most people don't read. I'll give you one little fact about that. I.G. Farben is not a man. It's Interessengesellschaft, Farben Industry,
which was
a chemical and dye works cartel that was formed in Germany about 1925.
Right.
And the important fact I want to say is that I.G. Farben owns as much stock in the Standard Oil companies as do the Rockefeller family.
And Chase Manhattan.
And so the Rockefeller Combine, or as often spoke of, financial group in this country, can't say a thing without, in effect, the okay of Martin Bormann. Now, they don't tell you that. But that's the real importance of the book, and unfortunately, the book is $14.95, which isn't too bad these days, but we're lucky to have any at all. And sometime later, maybe we can talk about that, why some books are scarce and suppressed and why some aren't.
Okay, yeah, we should indeed get into that.
That's just
Paul Manning's
two books. I think Project Paperclip is one of the essentials.
Yeah.
I always put that at the top of my list. If you want to know who killed Kennedy, you have to read the Project Paperclip because it brings over 700 Nazis and their families from World War II. But the head Nazi of them all was Walter Dornberger. He was above von Braun. He hired von Braun at Punemann, and Dornberger became the head of Bell Aerospace and one of the main physicists for him, a third-generation Harvard physicist, was named Michael Payne, and it was at his home when Lee and Marina Oswald lived in Irving, Texas. Right. When they stayed there, Mrs. Payne took her to New Orleans and picked her up. And the paperclip intentions is part of the Torbett document. Don't you think that's one of the biggies?
Well, I agree with you on the book is good, but unfortunately the book is out of print and very scarce. And if you're lucky to go to a library and find Project Paperclip by Clarence Lasby, that's terrific. I hope you can get a chance to read it. But I'm sorry, I cannot find it. I kept it on my list for 8 years. And then it finally went out of print, and there was nothing I can do.
What happened to him? Did you ever hear?
I don't know what happened to Lasby. I presumably he's still around. We should check.
If he's not, we'll copy his book too.
We may have to do this.
Maybe you'll let us.
I have gotten permission to copy quite a few manuscripts, of which I pay royalties to the authors on. We try to do everything, not only fair, but on the up and up and legitimate.
Walter Bowart wanted to go into a business with us where we took books that weren't, and he wrote Operation Mind Control.
Well, that brings up another book that I'm sure is on both of our lists. It's Operation Mind Control by Walter Bowart. And absolutely an essential, terrific book. It talks about not only the military-industrial complex, that is that group of monopoly state capitalists who are running the aerospace and the weapons and the arms industries, but it talks about the whole subject of mind control, which is really new to an awful lot of people, but one of the major ways that intelligence agencies working for this group control people is by practicing mind control, literally a kind of a Manchurian candidate. Mm-hmm. And these people do exist. They can do this to you. And
they've done it.
These people go on. They've done it. And these people that they put under mind control do go around and perform various tasks and operations around the world, including an awful lot of murders.
And you have over a dozen books on that mind control connection.
Now, mind control.
Yeah, but this was one of the first breakthroughs.
See, none of the other mind control books ever admitted that you could perfect mind control on a human person so that he was at your bidding. He would do what you wanted him to do. He would perform
kill heads of states and things,
Now, you can't program everybody to do that, but there are certain susceptible individuals who, by the use of drugs and hypnosis, can be mind controlled. So Operation Mind Control is a breakthrough book, and it never was issued in hardcover, you can guess. It did come out in 1978 in softcover by Dell Publishing, but a very, very short press run for paperback books. Probably 5 or 10,000 were printed. Which is just nothing.
And that was just after SLA and...
That's 2,000 more than the Warren Commission
January 1978.
Jonestown was indeed a confirmation.
So we can each call
Dan
that
White
number
murder.
Three.
We agree. I think another one is Galen's Spy of the Century.
Okay.
You know, the person called in and said, you're going for Hitler. Well, Hitler's chief of the Intelligence East was given 200... Alan Dulles of the Warren Commission gave Galen, Hitler's top espionage agent, $200 million within a short period of time, and brought him to this country just when the war was over, and he formed our National Security Council, the one that's causing so much with Contragate and with the secret bombings of Cambodia and the committees that decide who kills heads of states. And this caller who said it's so obscure to talk about Hitler, it isn't obscure because his most trusted intelligence agent came to America in American uniform and worked at the Pentagon and set up a catch-22 that off-balanced the Constitution. The balance of the Constitution didn't account for a National Security Council that would tell the president what he had to do. We had the Congress and the president, the judicial and executive legislative working together, and that was tilted after the war by bringing these people from Germany who formed a new type of constitution with the National Security Council and then went back to Germany to head the German intelligence. So I think Galen's spy of the century. Don't you think that's one of the most important?
Yeah, but again, we're up against a terrible problem, is that the book is out of print and it's just practically unobtainable.
But if people
Libraries have it.
Yeah, if people are listening to the show or taping this, they go to the library.
Don't always say that.
No,
because many of these books have been stolen out of libraries.
This is true.
So
but some do.
I just don't want to say that the book is easy to obtain.
But go look for it, though. Go look.
But by all means, look for
it. You don't have any more of those?
No, I haven't.
Well, we'll put that on our list.
And you can't find it. Now, the hardcover is much easier to find than the paper, but the paperback is one of the very rare books. And, I almost cry sometimes. I think of the book wholesaler way back when, and there was a whole stack of them sitting on the shelves.
Yeah.
And this was in 1973. And what did I know? I didn't know that I should have grabbed all of that.